Hello, I'm Keith Miller. Before signing up for the next 12 weeks of experimental living in this group, Bruce and I feel it's only fair to give you a little information about what we're going to try to do and to give you a taste of the approach we'll be using. Much of my own spiritual journey has been spent alone, wondering if my thoughts and experiences were even normal or if I wasn't much of a Christian. I've always had a lot of questions, and yet I felt unable to ask many of them in the church because they seemed so naive. Besides, other people in the congregation didn't appear to be troubled by the contradictory impressions and fears of not being accepted, which often bugged me. When I heard something in a sermon, for instance, that really made sense to me, I'd tell myself I'm going home and change my behavior and try living out the thing the minister was preaching. But almost always, by the time I got home, I couldn't even remember what I was going to change. And when I could, there wasn't anybody to encourage me to try, or with whom I might discuss the difficulties of making any real changes in my life. So there wasn't any way to check out the possibilities of integrating what I believed in my head into the bloodstream of my daily living, at home or at work or with the people I knew and associated every week. This course is designed to give you a place to investigate the possible consequences in your own life of taking your faith in God very seriously and personally. Bruce Larson and I are going to be with you in this course through this tape and through the reading book and through the material. How do you feel, Bruce, about beginning a course like this with these people?
Well, Keith, if I'm going to be honest, I've got to tell you I'm scared. Because in my head, I know that what we're about to launch together is the very heart of what the good news is all about. Because faith is an adventure, and God calls us to move from the safe and the secure out into the risky and the scary, because change is the name of the game. But something in me, the small boy, doesn't want to change and wants to find security places and doctrines and beliefs and little pockets and corners where I can be safe. And I just don't believe that's where we're supposed to be. So part of me wants to hold back, and part of me says, wow, let's go, and we're off.
What we're trying to get at, it seems to me, is a kind of a newness. Bruce, you've talked about this. How do you feel about going into newness, other than being threatened?
Well, I think, see, the thing that God has promised us is that if any man be in Christ, he's a new creation. And a Greek scholar friend of mine told me a while ago that the meaning of new is fresh, as in fresh bread. And the alternative to not finding God's plan for my life is to be stale. Now, I don't want to be stale. But the more safe I try to be, the more stale I become, and the more I can risk for God and with some people, the more fresh I become and the more change opens up. And so I'm kind of excited about it, Keith.
What we're trying to do this meeting is to get to know each other. There are no reading assignments for us to discuss this first time. There will be during the next time. So we'd like to try to get acquainted. Then those of you who decide to sign up for the next 12 weeks will know something about the people on the trip with you. We're going to ask each other some questions. These questions are safe. You can pass on anyone you want to. Your leader will give you instructions regarding the first group session now. Where did I live between the ages of 7 and 12 years? Well, we lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was the oil capital of the world. This was what we claimed. And it was a city of about 150,000. Where did you live, Bruce?
We lived in the Chicago area, and I was an only child. It was the Great Depression, and every 2 years we moved. So that we moved from apartment to apartment to house to an apartment, trying to find cheaper lodgings, and it meant that I never really had a place that was mine.
Heating our home. We heated with gas in Tulsa. We had two or three kinds of heat. One of the kinds, we had these open gas burners in the rooms, with the clay mantles. You turn them on, it'd flare up, and I was always afraid it'd burn my eyes, burn my eyebrows off. And then we had a little floor furnace. And I remember there was a kid who was tougher than I was, and I was scared to death he was going to whip me in front of my friends when his family had come to visit me from out of town. And I remember that he didn't know what a floor furnace was, and I remember getting him and telling him, oh, he said, this is the way you warm your feet. And I had that thing turned up to a white-hot heat. And he took off his shoes. I said, you just jump out in the middle of it. This kid jumped out and waffled his feet. I remember I got severely punished, but I remember I always thought if he whipped me, I had him. But this is the way we heated our home, with gas. How'd you heat your home, Bruce?
Well, in our living around, we lived mostly in apartments, but for 1 2-year period, we had a house. And we had a coal furnace in the basement, no stoker, And my mother, not my dad, would go down and stoke that rascal. Yeah. I did once in a while. And I can recall when the spring floods came and the basement would leak, all the coal would float and the furnace would go out. And we'd put on boots and go down there and try to salvage something. And we had great family togetherness, my mother and dad and myself, just trying to stay warm with the floating coal and no heat in the furnace. A great 2 years of togetherness. Not much heat, lots of togetherness.
Okay. How did the rest of you heat your home? The center of human warmth in our house was, I think, the dining room. This was when I was a small boy. These were Depression days, and my dad had to travel a lot. And I remember my mother, I had one brother, and he was 5 years older than I, and she was determined to make gentlemen out of us if it killed us both. You know, and we ate in the dining room in the evening. And I remember when Dad was home, this was kind of a neat, warm place. He would tell us about where he'd been, and then after dinner, he'd sit there and tell us about trips we might take after the Depression when we could afford it. And I remember he would look at me and he'd say, "Now, Johnny," my first name's John, said, "Johnny, I'm going to take you to the Grand Canyon. You're going to sit on my shoulders and we're going to look," and he'd paint a picture of looking far out over this enormous place, and the sun would be setting, and I'd just sit there in awe. Then I remember sometimes sitting there when Mother and Dad would be mad at each other, and they wouldn't be saying anything, and I'd be panicky inside for fear something was going to break this up. This place, though, as I look back, was the warm place in our house where I felt kind of like we were a family and a group. Okay, do you have any place that was...
Oh, yeah, I can remember, even though we moved often, a living room became the place where my parents would be together almost every night that we didn't have company or something, and they'd play double solitaire. They'd sit across from each other,
yeah,
and they played cutthroat double solitaire called Russian Bank. But every night at 10, I'd be in studying or doing something, and Mother would make good homemade Swedish coffee. Both my parents were immigrants from Sweden that met in this country, but she'd make this good Swedish coffee with home-baked goods, and the radio was on to either Mert and Marge or One Man's Family, one of those wonderful, the old Atwater Kent radio, and we'd sit there and hear a couple of 15-minute or half-hour shows and drink the coffee, and we'd talk about things, and my dad had dreams for us of going up to Canada, he and I, in a birch bark canoe, and going through all the northern wilderness together in a, you know, pack deal. And that's when the adventure came and the love and the warmth. And that never changed. Even though we moved, that 10 o'clock thing was kind of a ritual of the three of us being together.
Did you ever make it on your canoe trip?
Never made it.
We're going to the Grand Canyon this summer, I think. We never made it. How about the rest of you? When you think back, what was the center of human warmth in your home? This one's kind of hard for me, the whole idea of a time when God became more than just a word. The first time I can remember was... when I was a little boy, we had two boys in our family. My brother was 5 years older, and I had a tremendous need to compete with him to win my dad's love. I thought I just idolized him, but my real problem was I had to do what he did. So all day long, it was a real chore. We'd run through a field, and he'd jump over the creek, and I'd jump in it. And he'd roll his pants legs up, you know, three notches. We had those no chain guides on the bicycle. He'd roll his pants legs up. I'd roll mine up three turns, and it'd clear the crotch. I never noticed it was different. So at night, when I went to bed, my mother would come in the room where I slept, and she would put her hand, just touch me. And I remember I wanted her to do that. I couldn't have asked her, but I could be what I really was, and that was a little boy. And I remember lying there, and she would say a prayer. And then one time, I must have been 6, 7, 8, I don't know, but I remember one night she turned to me and she said, "Johnny, God's listening for you to pray too." And she taught me the Lord's Prayer and then had me say it over. And I remember when she left the room that night, I, for some reason, in the upper left-hand corner of the room, I looked in that direction, and it occurred to me that God was there and that I could talk to him. He had made everything and that he was listening, that if I could speak to him. And at that time, God became real to me. Now, of course, I buried this under basketballs and martinis and all kinds of things before I became a Christian, but I can't forget that time, that from then on, he was more than a word for me.
As you're talking, I'm just thinking about really two experiences. First of all, God was always real to my mother. And, of course, there's the model, so I never had any doubt about did he exist. But when I was in World War II, not during the fighting so much, but afterwards, the whole moral vacuum and the purposelessness of everybody around me, including me, made me suddenly realize the importance and relevance of God. And so I remember kneeling down in Stuttgart, Germany, when I was on guard duty one night, saying, "You know, God, take my life." And that was a real turning point. But it wasn't until some years, 2 or 3 years later, when I was back now studying for the ministry in a little college in Illinois, And I went down to a speech tournament, interstate collegiate speech tournament, and I was a finalist. And unbeknownst to me, three kids that were in college borrowed a car and drove 200 miles each way just to be there, to be with me as I gave this talk, something about God, I think, in the thing. And as they were praying with me in this car, parked in front of the auditorium before I was to go on and speak, I suddenly broke down and just sobbed because here were three people saying, "We love you." And at that moment, for the first time, I knew that God loved me just the way I was. It was like a second conversion.
Wow. Well, how about the rest of you? Can you recall a specific time when God became more than just a word? What we've been doing is tracing the experience of emotional security. When a baby's first fed and dry and has no reason to complain physiologically, but he's still crying, often he can be held next to somebody's warm body and he'll feel secure. And the next kind of feeling of security is human warmth, when he becomes conscious, and then he feels warm when the people around him are giving him feedback and are loving him. And so this center of human warmth becomes important. But there's another kind of something that's called warmth, and that is a deeper kind of human security. And we Christians feel that this is a relationship with God in which we have an ultimate kind of approval or acceptance or something analogous to being held physically as a child. And so what we're doing in this group and during these weeks is to investigate this transition from the ordinary kinds of security into the security that only God can give us. In our sessions, we will be experimenting with things like verbal personal prayer in the group, as well as intercessory prayer for group members between the sessions and for other people. And we realize many of you have never prayed, but we think it's very important to learn the language of prayer in a safe atmosphere. Now, we'll be trying different ways to read the scriptures. We'll be experimenting with approaches to loving the people in our own worlds, beginning from the inside with our families, moving out into our neighborhoods and vocational worlds. Now, if you decide to go with us on this trip during the next 12 weeks, we strongly recommend that you reread the 5 proposed ground rules in the personal word from the authors, which is the introduction to this study guide. And if you agree to these ground rules, then sign the agreement or commitment space under C in session 1. This is not a legalistic thing. We've just found that when you actually have to consider and put your name on something, that it becomes more real and deeply motivating. And if you cannot sign this in good conscience, that you intend to try to do these things, then we recommend that you not go with us, because we think this is very important. The gospel is free, but it's not cheap, and we feel that we need to get into this sort of thing. Now, we're excited about this adventure. It's very real for us and has been, and we're looking forward to being with you. We'll see you next week.